You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Photojournalists working in war zones risk their lives to bring us images that most people find difficult to look at, let alone experience firsthand. Issa Frage, Heidi Levine, and Charles Schwartz cover the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and tonight they'll be part of an International Center for Photography panel called Position, Taking Sides in Conflict Photography today. The event begins at 7 p.m. at the New School's Sway Duck Auditorium at 65 Fifth Avenue, and I'm very pleased to welcome Issa Frage, Heidi Levine, and Charles Schwartz to my show today. Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
First of all, are the terms war photography and conflict photography interchangeable, do you think? Heidi? Well,
yes, I think they are interchangeable.
Would you all agree? Do you make distinctions in certain kinds of conflicts
between
as opposed
conflict
to
and war, yeah, photographer? I think it's terminology for pretty much the same, to me at least.
How did each of you become war or conflict photographers? Issa, did you come by it naturally because you're a Palestinian native of Jerusalem?
My father is a photographer, so photography was for me as art, not as a war photography. But when the conflict started deteriorating in the Middle East, I was asked by CBS to cover the first day of the Intifada in Gaza, and that's when I started.
You started at a very important point.
So. Yeah.
And once you did it, of course, then that became what you do.
Usually I did the documentaries, documentation like profiles of portraits of people, war documentaries. But to be there in the location and look at things happening, that's a different, mood.
And Shaul, you're an Israeli.
I'm an Israeli. I moved here to New York 8 years ago. I think I'm first of all a photographer. I don't only do conflict, but being in conflict and specifically in Israel is always is just part of me, and it's always something I go back to. But it's definitely
Somebody's calling Issa for an assignment right now.
It's definitely something that always always takes you back, and it has its own laws and its own adrenaline rush and its own importance as part of the art I do, and I think for all of us that's kind of true.
Well, Issa said that he started because CBS asked him. Did you do something similar?
I started actually being a photographer in the Israeli Air Force. Later I pursued Israeli papers, and now I usually go back for Time magazine. But I think the outlet changes a little bit, but in general I think it's fair to say that it's part of the reportage we do. I don't only look for that,
And Heidi, you're from Boston.
Right.
So how did you wind up there?
I went to Israel back in 83 just to be on a kibbutz for 6 weeks, and I got a job with the AP and then called my professor, Frank Faulkner, at UMass Amherst, and asked him what I should do. Should I take the job or come back to school? And he said, go for it. He had covered Vietnam for UPI, and he felt I was very similar to him in many ways, and he encouraged me. I thought I would only stay in Israel for 1 year, and 1 year sort of turned into more than 20 years. Israel's a story, the whole Palestinian-Israeli conflict is a story that's it's been a front-page story ever since I've been there, and much longer, of course. And I feel, for myself, I would like to see this conflict end. So
do you feel that you, as a photographer, might play a role in affecting people's opinions and lead toward that end?
Well, we all try to show what is going on through our images. I work on both the Israeli and the Palestinian side. I travel often, sometimes even within both societies, it can take me 20 minutes to go from one side to the other side. And it's a circle of violence that doesn't seem to have any end to. And because I've been covering this story so long, I'm very dedicated to wanting to see this conflict finish. So,
well, Issa, how do you know when to where to find the action when you're in a conflict interest? Do you just listen to police reports?
Not only. The thing is that I will be asked to go somewhere, for example, do a story, and on the way you hear something happening, so you go back. Or
you mean explosions, generally?
Yeah, exactly. I have a small story. Once we were doing an interview with Arafat, three bombs came into Jerusalem. The office asked me to go to Jerusalem, and I said no, because it's important to be there with Arafat. Maybe he can comment on what was going on there. Why is the bombings happening? And that was a long time ago when the first bombing started. But usually how we hear about things happening is by other people. You know, it's like everybody talks about what's going on in each location, each area. So you just go there and wait for something like a demonstration, or in a demonstration, usually we know that after a demonstration, something will happen. It will deteriorate and something will happen, shooting, and somebody will get injured and maybe killed.
And maybe you were shot in the chest in September 1996 when you were working as a cameraman for CBS near Ramallah.
Yes.
So this is a dangerous thing as well.
It is dangerous, but you can never predict when it's going to happen and what's happening. You're just with your camera trying to cover what's happening there.
Schalt, is this a job that has a lot of people living on adrenaline? Do you feel depressed or bored when there isn't something happening?
I don't feel depressed or bored when something's not happening. And in fact, personally, one of the big reasons for me to leave Israel and come here was to actually get away, because I know how Heidi's and Issa's life is constantly on a beeper. What would feel strange if there is a big story and I'm not there. When the Lebanon war started now, it took me 3 days to get there, and it was itching. It was in my blood to cover it once it's big, but I do not feel, you know, depressed or a need to totally be in there. There's definitely an adrenaline rush when you do cover it.
Well, Issa said earlier that you don't always know why these things happen. Al Arabiya's offices in Gaza were hit in a bomb attack last month. There were no casualties. No one claimed responsibility. And I don't know whether it's a photographer's job to try to find that out, but you must be asking yourself constantly, what is really happening here? Or do you just simply go and become an eye, something connected to your camera?
That's very difficult to predict what's going on there, because it depends on what story was happening a day before, so that you understand that something went wrong in the media, and you can always hear that something was happening, then you know why it happened. It's because the day before something, the news was something wrong in the news. So the people who really work in the news and get the images in the multimedia or on television, they have to be careful of how to approach and give the, to have it on the screen or to have it on the newspaper. This is very important, because any image can really hurt one side or another.
And Heidi, that the title for the panel discussion tonight is Position: Taking Sides in Conflict Photography Today. Mm-hmm. As someone who is living in the Israeli side, mm-hmm. Wouldn't you automatically be taking pictures from one vantage point rather than another?
First of all, I'm American. I don't have an Israeli passport. So I do have an advantage to work on both sides of the story equally. So that gives me an advantage over Shaul. who's an Israeli photographer. And
who takes a lot of pictures of Israeli soldiers, for example, mm-hmm. because you have access.
I do, but I cannot access anything Palestinian territory, Lebanon, anywhere in the Middle East as of my passport, even though I live here for a while. I'm limited to that side.
Anissa, you're limited mostly to the Palestinian side?
No, in my case, that's different because I'm a Jerusalemite, I'm a Palestinian, and I carry a Jordanian passport, which is, I don't have.
So in a way, you're almost like Heidi, is you're a foreigner covering the series.
Yeah, in a way. Not exactly.
Paper-wise.
Yeah, paper-wise, but it's difficult for me to travel from place to place. Like, for example, if I'm like going to Gaza and Heidi can go into Gaza, but I can't go to Gaza because I'm considered as an Israeli because I'm a Jerusalemite. I carry an Israeli ID card.
These are weird ironies of this conflict, aren't they? Heidi, the editors of publications ultimately have the responsibility of making sure the coverage of a war is balanced. Have you ever regretted the way an editor used your work?
No, not really, but I've regretted the way, let's say, the French community once responded to my work when I had to cover a Paris match in October 2000. It was a photograph of a 2-year-old Palestinian baby named Sarah who was shot allegedly by settlers traveling back to her home village. And the French community in France was very upset because also the title read the War That Kills Children and threatened to cancel their subscription to Paris Match. And I was getting a lot of phone calls and radio stations.
The French Jewish community.
Yes.
And but you hadn't given them that title. You just sent them the picture.
Right. I don't do the titling. I mean, I also provide a caption for every photograph that I send.
They could also crop pictures, can't they, in a way mm-hmm. that might suggest something other than what you intended? Does that ever happen?
Yes. I mean, it's not only the crop when we're on assignment. You know, you send quite a few pictures, and the way they're laid out, the way the captions in the magazine are read and what they're laid out opposed to really changes in a way, you know, what I would see. Is it right or wrong? I don't know. Maybe from their point of view, it's right because they balance it differently. But
well, what about the organization that you're working for? Does that influence the subjects you might take pictures of? For example, that photo that you took, Heidi, mm-hmm. Would you have sent that to the New York Times? Or would that be something that Paris Match it would be more likely to be interested in?
I would send it to the New York Times as well. My agency, Super Press, would send it worldwide. And it
somebody
wasn't
would pick it up.
Worldwide. Of course, there are, I think, perhaps the European publications will show a little bit more than American publications. I know they may be a bit more sensitive about showing a dead body, or mutilated body more in a European publication and be a bit more conservative about showing it in an American publication.
My guests are Heidi Levine, Issa Frege, and Shaul Schwartz. We're talking about covering the Israeli-Palestinian conflict as photographers, and they're participating in a panel tonight at the International Center for Photography called Position, Taking Sides in Conflict Photography Today. It's at 7 p.m. at the New School's Swayduck Auditorium at 65 Fifth Avenue. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Issa Frege, Heidi Levine, and Shaul Schwartz, three of the participants in a panel discussion tonight at the International Center of Photography called Position, Taking Sides in Conflict Photography Today. It's at the New School Swayduck Auditorium at 65 Fifth Avenue tonight at 7. And while we were talking before, Issa's cell phone went off. I'm assuming that when you're on the assignment, when you're working, that usually means, oh, I got to get in the car and go somewhere. What do you keep in your cars to prepare you for any possibility? Heidi?
Well, my car is very unique. It is a total mess. It's been named the Gypsy Car.
Well, you all know each other?
Yes.
Is there a certain community of photographers, whether they're
very much so.
Palestinians or Israelis or Americans or French or whatever?
There's certain networks inside and certain people who call certain people who don't call certain people, and trades of information through phones.
Oh, there's something hot, you better get here right away.
Yeah, if you, for example, if you, in the Lebanon War, we were all cruising around and waiting for Israeli soldiers, as sad as it is, to come out injured or dead to take that picture. And me and Heidi would call each other and say, hey, there's something here. But certain people, and you would say, but don't bring this and this, because that's, it just works like that. It is an ironic twist on that.
So anyway, back to your car.
Back to my car? Well, I have a flak jacket, gas mask, everything to from inverters, converters. I transmit from the car a lot.
Water bottle, sleeping bag, right?
Sleeping bag, changes of clothes. I can go from being dressed to fit into an Orthodox Jewish community to fitting in to a Hamas rally in Gaza. So
you have to go to these things in disguise in some cases.
Not in disguise. I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to disguise myself and hide the fact that I'm a photographer, but I don't want to offend anybody. And if I'm working in a circumstance where I'm in an Orthodox neighborhood or a rally, I better not be wearing jeans. I should have my hair covered. I should wear a skirt. And
are people comfortable seeing a woman engage in that kind of activity?
It's quite difficult for me to work in a, let's say, a rally of only Orthodox men. They don't like it. Sometimes I've been spit on, or I've had a camera flash broken off my camera.
And since Heidi says she brings flak jackets and gas masks, that suggests that there actually are times when you have to have those things handy. How often have you had to put on a flak jacket, Issa?
Actually, everybody started putting the flak jackets on after I was shot. Because 1996, nobody thought of having flak jackets. And after I was shot, they said, this is very dangerous.
Do you know who
every
shot
news,
you?
Huh?
Do you know who shot you?
No, but actually when I was doing, I wasn't doing news when I did, when I was shot. I was covering a 60 minute for Bob Simon. How media covers the news. So I was focusing on photographers, reporters, or cameramen covering the incident there. Since I was shot then, nobody thought of having any flak jackets or helmets or anything else. Mm-hmm. Now everybody, whenever they go anywhere, they bring their flak jackets.
The conflict has also intensified to complete different standards. So it is something you carry.
It's better to have it in the car.
It's really better to have it.
Just in case.
Go ahead, Eddie.
No, one of the problems that we face working there is that you really never always know what you're going to do. It's an area that you have fast breaking news constantly. You may be on an assignment doing a feature story and there's a bombing or there's a gun battle that erupts between Israeli soldiers and Palestinians, or
between
nowadays,
Hamas and Fatah.
Exactly. So you just better have everything that you need, because I mean, I've actually gone out of the house saying, okay, I'll be back in 3 hours, and ended up coming back in 7 days because something was going on in Gaza. So you really need to be prepared all the time. You just never know, and you're still always surprised. I think last summer's war with Lebanon took everybody by surprise, and I remember all of us were walking around almost pinching each other, saying, we cannot believe this story is happening. We just were in shock. So it's a place that really will always surprise you somehow. even though it's going on so many years, there's always some kind of new twist or...
There's an amazing contrast, I think. When you cover other war zones, if you go to Baghdad, you're in a war, even if you're in a hotel. In Israel, there's this lie, this sort of... Because you could sit at a coffee shop in Jerusalem or in Tel Aviv and feel like any European city, really. And the quickness of it and the fact that it's 2 miles away and the way it just goes off is... It never stops surprising, even...
So. Now, Naomi also said that, Heidi said that she has transmitters. And I'm assuming that's because digital photography is now the norm.
Mm-hmm.
How much has the new technology changed everything? Do you also Photoshop any of your photos?
Yes, we Photoshop almost all of our. Photoshop is really the dark room of modern days, and we have to print and clean of dust and caption. It's a must. Any picture you transmit, even to caption, goes through Photoshop.
But you don't alter the images, I hope. There were scandals when a photographer enhanced an image, adding more smoke to a fire during the war in Lebanon.
True. There's always going to be someone who messes up and does wrong things, but part of our job is to Photoshop the images, and the high majority of photographers working on the conflict from all sides have been very dedicated and have done their... work very objective. If one, it's kind of hurts us because one guy created more smoke, and everybody was extremely nervous and questioning, you know, the credibility of journalists who have been really doing their work and continue to do their work so truthfully.
But Richard Avedon once said, "All photographs are accurate. None of them is the truth." Can you ever get the real truth in a war zone or in a photograph for that matter?
Well, it's a lot perspective more than, I think, Photoshop. And that's stayed true for Avedon's days till today. It's where you look at. It's what lens you use. It's what moment you grab. And many times, in a way, it did happen, but it is deceiving. Not to mention how it's used, but even the photo itself.
Well, if you were to be in a situation where you were faced with taking a photograph that went against your own personal inclinations, that might tell a story that you really didn't want the world to know, would you still take the picture because that's your responsibility as a journalist?
Yeah, I think I would. I think it happens a lot. Not every story we're called upon is something I believe in or I want, but it's my job to cover, and I try to do it honestly to the publication I'm working and to the object I'm covering.
My guests are Shaul Schwartz, Heidi Levine, and Issa Frege, and they are part of a panel. There'll be other people as well participating in this panel called Position, Taking Sides in Conflict Photography today at the New School Swayduck Auditorium at 65 Fifth Avenue. It's being put together by the International Center of Photography. This is WNYC. And WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. The same for you, Issa? Does politics and personal history and all the rest just fly out the window when you have a camera in front of you?
Of course. I consider myself as an outsider whenever I go to a location to do anything. If anything happens, I'm just new there. I have to understand where I'm standing and what I'm doing, because I don't also want to bring the wrong image. I try to capture every single thing to make a sequence out of it so as to give the editor the right way to do his story. And I try to understand what's going on there. But I'm never, as a Palestinian, to look, if I'm covering an Israeli rally, I'll try to understand what's going on, or like a bus being bombed in Jerusalem. I would just film the misery of or the pain of the Israeli, because it's the same thing. For me, I look at the conflict as both. There is a war there is a conflict there, and I try to cover it the right way to bring it to the audience.
Heidi, years ago I spoke to a photographer who took that famous picture of a man who'd burned himself, a Buddhist monk who'd burned himself during the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. And everybody asked this man the same question. Should you have been taking the picture or throwing water on him and stopping him from burning? How does a photographer deal with that? Sometimes when you see somebody who is hurt, mm-hmm. and you have to make a choice, take the picture or get an ambulance.
I think I've been in situations where sometimes I've put my cameras down and tried to help. And it's a difficult situation. I was always thinking, like, if I had shot the stills of this Palestinian boy in the beginning of the Intifada, Muhammad al-Duri, who was shot together with his father, I mean, if I had been there, like, what would I do? Would I try to run and try to, I don't know, protect the child or something? There are times where you really cannot interfere, and then there are times where I think you can. Sure. And if you get to a scene,
it's difficult.
And if you can, it's hard to.
It's difficult to go and help somebody who really. If you're like, before I was shot, we go back to this incident where it was like so sensitive for me, because I had a friend of mine who was shot in the leg. He's a still photographer. He was running from one side of the street to the other side of the street, and he was shot in the middle of running from one side to the other. And I couldn't do anything. It's because it's dangerous. If I go there, I might have the bullet. Mm-hmm. And then I took a side, but when you are in a zone where things are happening, ambulances are there, ready to help those people, ready to carry them, and it's difficult. If there is somebody there is who's shot, you just try to call the ambulance, which is like 5-10 meters away from you. Just call him, tell him that there's an injured. I saw him there. You just go and take the injured. In this conflict there, the ambulances comes really. They know that there is a.
They stay in.
They
the
stay
area.
In the area. They're always there. Even Israeli ambulances or Palestinian ambulances, they're ready to work.
Now, Shaul, I remember some years back, Susan Micellis was chided by a reviewer for making pictures that were too beautiful about a conflict in Nicaragua. Is that a problem? You're a photographer first, and I'm sure that even though you're just trying to record what's going on, you also think a lot about how that image is going to turn out, what you're going to leave in, what you're going to take out, what the light is like. So how do you deal with that? Beautiful pictures of horrible things.
Well, it's a weird thing what we do. I have to give that. It is a strange profession, and you do want your pictures to impact and as much as possible, and we paint with light. We really do. And it's true for war situations, so you do try to make your pictures, I wouldn't say beautiful, but as strong as possible. And sometimes that may be a light coming in on the right spot. And it may be very strange for people to say, why is that man looking for a light to hit the bloodstain? But technically, yes. I think we all try and make the image that will affect the viewer in, you know, the most impactful way. And that means working with all of that.
But all the art and skill that you have.
All the art and skill. And sometimes you're in situations that are very extreme war and you actually don't have a picture. And sometimes it's vice versa. You could make a very strong picture out of something that just hints very softly using light. And
sometimes we photograph things that we could never even send out because they're so gruesome. Nobody would ever publish it. Mm.
And what effect does it have on you? In Issa's case, he was shot. I would have thought I would have, at that point, I would go start taking pictures of flowers somewhere. soldiers talk about post-traumatic syndrome. Is that a problem with photographers who've been through this kind of tension?
Yes.
I think so. Yes. Very. Yes. Much so. In fact, I think it's a subject that was ignored for many, many years. And now I know that, like, say, the wires AP Reuters, AFP, are actually offering their writers and photographers counseling, because I think people are in our profession are more aware of it, more open about it. They're not hiding it as much as they used to. They're not.
But there is a macho side to this whole
of
thing,
course,
even for the women.
Of course,
involved.
But I think it's become more recognized that there's just no way that you can do what we're doing and not be emotionally affected.
So you said you didn't go into fashion photography?
No. actually, I went into documentary. Document the life of people, and that's what I did. I did a film on the Bedouins because it's a culture that is dying. And I did a film on the wall. I did many other documentaries for others, but I always enter into the documentary not as also a photographer, as a cameraman, but as also the idea, because I know the conflict better than anybody. I live there, and I don't take part in the conflict. I just look at it from a different perspective, and I like to help both people, because Israelis and Palestinians, I find that they can live together, but how to do it, it's not my case as a photographer. But
you'd be a politician.
Yeah, it's a politics.
I want to thank you all so much for being with us today. I've been talking with Issa Frege, Heidi Levine, and Shaul Schwartz, three of the participants in a panel discussion tonight at 7 o'clock at the New School at 65 Fifth Avenue. I hear it's sold out, but you might be able to wangle a ticket, and there is a phone number, 212-857-0001, or you can visit icp.org for more information. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.